our Guru Parampara, especially the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Shri Jiva Goswami, seeking their mercy, so they can understand Srimad Bhagavatam, especially the very, very deep insight of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam, as we've been learning, is self-revealing, and the message coming straight from the spiritual world. Krishna directly reveals himself within the very heart of the devotee. You know, those who hear Srimad Bhagavatam. So let's offer our prayers. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshurmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shyuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Saganaragunatanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadhavaitam Savathutam Parijana Srishna Krishna Jai Shri Adha Krishna Saganaragunatanvitam Tam Sajivam Adavaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Deena Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Dakta Kanchan Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Ramo Ramo Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam Namaskritya Narom Chaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat Nashta Praeshva Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prem Padayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namine I offer my respectful obeisances under the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna Chaitanya, who is more magnanimous than any other expansions, any other avatars, incarnation of Krishna. That he is not even Krishna incarnation, he is Swayam Krishna, he is not different from Krishna. So even Krishna himself, because he is bestowing freely what no one else has ever given, and that is Krishna Prema. Krishna Varnam Tvisha Krishnam Sango Pango Asta Parshadam Yagnahi Sankirtana Prayer Yajanti Sunedasa. In the age of Kali, intelligent persons perform congregational chanting to worship the incarnation of Godhead who constantly sings the name of Krishna. Although his complexion is not blackish, he is Krishna himself. He is accompanied by his associates, servants, weapons, confidential companions. So now we offer our prayers to the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Nana Sastra Vicharanai Kanipunau Shad Dharma Samstapakau Loka Nama Hitakarinam Trihuvane मान्यौ शरण्याकरौ राधा कृष्ण पदारविन्द भजना आनन्देन मत्तालिकौ वन्दे रूप सनातन रघुयुगौ श्रीजीव गोपालकौ. ट्रांसलेशन. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jeeva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaurava Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Jai Shri Prabhupada, Jai Shri Prabhupada, Govinda Pada Bhushan, Namo Bhajami. Let me turn on the camera here. Thank you.
So that is what you call trans-empirical revelation.
Empirical means this world. Trans means beyond this world, straight from the spiritual world, directly by Swayam Krishna himself, the original Krishna, the Vrindavan Krishna, who reveals himself directly within the very heart of his devotees. No? And that is what exactly what Srila Vyasadeva compiled, Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam is not different from Krishna. Yeah, and Srimad Bhagavatam is revealing about Krishna to us, those who properly hear. So then text 50 to 63, so in that absolute truth was revealed. So what Jiva Goswami asked a question, what is the basic fundamental characteristics of that supreme tattva, the absolute truth that is revealed within Srimad Bhagavatam? Then we will study the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam also here. So then, what about text 50 to 63? So in the first part, as you see in the left side, text 50 to 55, we already heard in lessons 14 and 15. But how we can really understand, comprehend that supreme absolute truth. So here, that's where Jiva Goswami, as we learned in text 50 to 53, 52 in fact, 50, 51, we heard that is actually the non-dual supreme consciousness. Non-dual means with one without the second, as I explained to you in great details. That there are three kinds of differences, one with another one. So, like Swajatiya Veda, Veda means difference. Swajatiya Veda means two near identical objects, things within the same class. So, there is a difference between that. And the example was given was like a chair, a couple of chairs. Both are chairs, in that regard, they are same. But there is a difference. Each has its own individuality. In that we can surmise that suppose we paint one chair with one particular color, so that would be distinct from another one. So that would be difference. So that Swajatiya Bheda is not there within Krishna. Like Krishna and his expansions, all exactly same. There is no absolute difference. No. But all the expansions are dependent on the original Krishna, while Krishna himself is Swayam Krishna, is totally independent. So that difference, Swajatiya Bheda difference, is also not there within Krishna. Then there is a Vijatiya Bheda, that means two objects of different classes, like chair and a table. So there is obviously there is a difference. Even that difference is also not there within Krishna. So that is, and then the third kind of difference is Svagata Veda. That means within the difference within the object itself. So if you have an object and you break it down to parts, so the parts are distinct from the original. So there's a great deal of difference. Here, that is also in Krishna. Because Krishna and his body and his limbs, they are identical, no difference between Krishna and his body and his limbs, absolutely same, you know. So that is what Jiva Goswami help us to understand, what is non-dual. Non-dual means one without second. And it is supreme consciousness, the Advaita Jnana. In fact, he quotes these words from Srimad Bhagavatam that you see at the bottom of this PowerPoint. 1211, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 11. And that's one of the most important verse in the entire Bhagavatam. The entire Tattva Sandarbha is dependent on this verse. And even the next Bhagavat Sandarbha, Paramatma Sandarbha, also based on this particular verse. Vadanti Tattva Vadas Vidas. Vadanti Tat Tattva Vidas. Tattva Vidas means those who are learned transcendentalists. Vadanti, they say, what Vadanti Tat, they changing. So that is the consciousness of the absolute truth. And that is actually explained in three parts. That three parts here, there are three aspects of it. A great deal we learn when we in the very first week of June, and that is Brahma Eti, Paramatma Eti, Bhagavan Eti, Shabda Eti. So Brahman, Brahman is the impersonal effulgence of Krishna, the undifferentiated, without any attributes, and that is Sarva Vyapi. It is spreads all pervading. That is Brahman, Supreme Brahman, and the localized of that entity, that absolute truth, is Paramatma as the super soul within our heart and every atom of the universe. And then the complete realization, that is Bhagavan realization, and that is that encompasses all Brahman, Paramatma dependent on Bhagavan. So then the question was posed by Srila Jiva Goswami, what is the fundamental characteristic of this Supreme Eternal Consciousness? So there are two ways looking at it. One is to look at it individual consciousness, and that way, that viewpoint, in fact that technically Sanskrit name is called Vyashti Nirdesha, that you see in the left hand bottom portion of it. So that we covered in our verses 50 to 55, last 2 weeks we talked about. So that is because Jiva Goswami also that Brahman, Supreme Brahman, and the Jivatma, the individual living entities, they are his part and parcel. So qualitatively one and the same. There are distinctions also, because one quantitative differences are there. So the individual consciousness, that's the microcosm from the totality, that is the macrocosm. So here, when you, because the Supreme Consciousness for the conditioned soul, we cannot comprehend. So to give some idea, it's a very standard way of explaining something that we have no scope of it to understand that, how to convey that understanding. So here, the standard procedure is to show them, compare that the person is familiar with it in his day-to-day life experience, you know. So we, the living entities, we also are conscious beings. We are aware of ourselves, and we are also aware of, in a limited way, our surroundings, including our physical body itself, you know. So when you look at and examine our individual consciousness, we get some idea about the Supreme Consciousness, of which we are part and parcel. And that is called Vyashti Nirdesha, its viewpoint. Viewpoint from the individuality. It is very similar to like you check a drop of ocean. If you examine chemically, like salt content, sodium chloride, it's exactly the same of the entire ocean. You know? You don't have to examine the entire ocean, but you take a representative sample of few drops here and there, and you average it out, that will represent the entire ocean, you know. Now, in the US, it's an election season, presidential election, so they constantly conduct polling, you know, to assess, to determine what the general public thinking about, what are the issues that is directly relevant to them. So what the politicians do, that they conduct these polls. So there are millions and millions of people are there, let's say, you know, hundreds of millions, you know. They take a few hundred to few thousand people's interviews. They ask questions, the reporters go and get their views from different regions. So that's how they surmise what the people in general are thinking about it. So that is very similar to what I'm talking about. election, just even before the election is over, they conduct this called what you call exit polling. So people who vote and they come out of the voting booth, they ask questions, few of them like 100 or thousands, what were their important issues to them, who did they vote, and so on like that. So then on the election night, from the exit polling, they can predict what is going to be the outcome. If it's a lopsided decision, they would declare it within just minutes before even the entire vote counting is done next morning, and they declare the winner. And sometimes the close election, it might take a few hours, but nonetheless, this exit polling. So this is what they would be examining, a small sample, and from that they get the viewpoint of the entire, So that's one way of looking at it. So that is what we examined in last week, last couple of weeks. And there we saw Jiva Goswami is quoting that particular statements, the transcendentalists very often quote, Tat Tvam Asi. Tvam means we, the living entity, Tvam you. You are that. You means the living entity, that the Supreme Brahman, and that is connected with the statement from Vedanta Sutra, also Anyartha Paramarsha. So from living entity's individual consciousness, we can surmise what the Supreme Consciousness characteristic might be there. And then he quotes these two verses from people and Yogendra, one of the nine Yogendras, in their response to King Nimi's questions. So there he explains what is the nature of the Jiva Tattva, and that is summarized in the next PowerPoint, as you can see here, next PowerPoint. That we, the living entity, also, PowerPoint number two, Prabhuji, that living entities, we are also conscious, like the Supreme Consciousness, but we are limited way. We are conscious about, so we have the capacity to know ourselves, we have knowledge of ourselves, that means our body, and our surroundings, As you can see the next part in a minute, you'll show up. So we are capable of knowing ourselves and also knowing the objects other than ourselves, like this physical body. But it is distinct. Our soul, we ourselves are distinct from material energy, because that is our physical body. Physical body undergoes six kinds of changes. It takes birth, grows, and then goes different ages. Then it dwindles, goes to old age, and so on like that. Ultimately, perishes. But the soul who is seen, so he is the seer. And what is to be seen? That is physical body. So the physical body and the senses in the mind cannot be seer. It's the living soul, the soul himself is a seer, and he obviously doesn't undergo, by definition, the changes that the body undergoes. Otherwise, how would he be able to recall all those changes? He can see those changes, So these are the basic characteristics of Jiva Tattva, or the consciousness. That is what Rishi, in the first verse that has been quoted, 11th canto, 3rd chapter, text 38, and 39 quotes that. So this is the analysis from the individual perspective, Vyashti Nirdesha, which sheds light on the nature of the totality of the non-dual consciousness, that is Tattva, the supreme or ultimate reality, So in fact, there is another way of looking at it, is to the totality. So the Supreme Consciousness, his creation, this empirical world, material world, from there also we can make it can shed light on the supreme entity. So now Jiva Goswami is going to begin explaining the absolute truth, Tattva, from the viewpoint of aggregate. So that is called Samashti Nirdesha. As I told you, Nirdesha means it is the viewpoint. draw from an individual individuality, and you draw conclusions from the total. Now we look at the totality, and from you draw some ideas what that supreme consciousness might look like. And this is also again based on the revelation in Srimad Bhagavatam by Sukadeva Goswami in Canto 2, and similar conclusions been drawn by Suta Goswami also slightly from a different angle that we will see in the next week. So today we will examine the 10 characteristics of Mahapurana. Srimad Bhagavatam is a Mahapurana. So there are 10 subject matters. That is Sukadeva Goswami explaining that you see in this PowerPoint now. Section 56 to 63, that is what we are going to be beginning. Lesson 16 and 17, today is lesson 16. So what is that section? The absolute truth defined in universal terms, samashti nirdesha. So from the totality, you look from the entirety of that and you draw conclusions of that, and as well as from these 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, either from statements of Sukadeva Goswami or Suta Goswami. So first we'll look at the statements of Sukadeva Goswami that he explained in Canto 2, chapter 10, 1 to 10 verses. So analysis of Srimad Bhagavatam's 10 topics in Canto 2 as presented by Sukadeva. So it's 10 chapter, I forgot that, what is that, chapter 1. Then next week we'll look at it, Suta Goswami's statements from a slightly different angle from Canto 12, you know, that is verses 61 to 63, final text. So let's see what is the conclusion. So here, the next PowerPoint will give you a breakdown of this first section, lesson 16 that we are talking about today, chapters 56 to 60. There are 5 chapters, and I've given you that in the next PowerPoint. So that is about the analysis of Srimad Bhagavatam's 10 topics in Canto 2. As presented by Sukadeva Goswami. So chapter 56, first of all, Srimad Bhagavatam is a Mahapurana because it has 10 subject matters, as you see in this PowerPoint. And that helps us to understand the Supreme Brahman from the aggregate point of view, before we saw from individual, right? From a Jiva Tattva. So here that is called Samashti Nirdesha. So here, we are just going to go through that chapter. Jiva Goswami, Sukadeva Goswami is talking about explaining the first 9 topics. So he describes the first 9 topics, but that is not actually his motive. He is, through these 9 topics, he is emphasizing the 10th topic. So that is what, that's what we are going to see. So, what are those first 9 topics that he describes? And then chapter 58, 59, 60, he goes in detail and elaborate what is the supreme, the 10th topic called the ultimate shelter, Ashraya Tattva, the elements of what is the shelter, the supreme shelter, which is totally independent. So that we will see. So in 58 is a basic introduction, introductory understanding of this 10th subject, Ashraya Tattva, and that is the ultimate shelter of all, the entire existence, and that is the Bhagavan feature of the Absolute Truth. Then text 59, we will see what Sukadeva Goswami is explaining to us. That the other 9 tattvas surface, at a cursory look, it looks like they are shelter of each other, right? In fact, they are called these Purushas, you know. Adi Atmika Purusha, Adi Daivika Purusha, and Adi Bhautika Purusha. We will go through the definitions that Jiva Goswami provides us that and explains us how they are shelters, seemingly shelters of each other, but they are not the true shelter. He is the one, the supreme shelter of all these three entities, you know, all these three Purushas. So that is what described in this text 60, interdependency of these three Purushas. The super soul is the shelter, and Supreme is the shelter of all three, and he is his own shelter also. So in certain senses, these three Purushas are the Atmika Purusha, are the Daivika Purusha, are the Bhautika Purusha. They may be considered shelter of each other, but in true reality, we'll see the supreme shelter is this, the Ashrita, you know, the super soul, the Paramatma feature, ultimate is Bhagavan. So let's go begin with chapter 56. So again, before I go, I want to make sure that you understand, in the last 2 weeks, so the question that Jiva Goswami is raising, what is the fundamental characteristics of this Advaita Jnana? Advaita Jnana means the non-dual supreme consciousness. What is it that actually? So in order to shed some light, in order to comprehend that, first he examines the individual Jiva Tattva, and from a Jiva Tattva he elaborates, he kind of extrapolates what the Supreme Tattva, Supreme Consciousness would look like, you know. So here, now Sukadeva Goswami is going to explain from a Samasti Nirdesha. So he is looking at the totality, Lord's creation, maintenance feature of the super soul. So there are 10 verses. So here, Canto 2, Chapter 10, Text 1 through 9 actually. So I'm not going to read that. Let's first 2 verses. So each of these explanation of the 9 tattvas that he's going to explain, he's going to explain Jiva Swami. That's what is described in the next verses actually. So very first verse, so 10 topics are listed, he's listing that. And that is how any Purana that has 10 characteristics, 10 subject matters, that is how that particular Purana is called Mahapurana, the major Purana, you know. And we will see next week, in Sutta Goswami's explanation, there are minor Puranas, there are 18 Mahapuranas, and there are 18 minor Puranas. 8 subject matters, you know, I'm sorry, 5 subject matters. So here it is, the first verse, Atra Sarga Visargascha Sthanam Poshanam Utaya Manvantara Ishanakataha Nirodha Muktir Ashraya. So the 10 topics, Sarga Visarga Sthanam Poshanam Utaya Manvantara Ishanakataha Nirodha Mukti Ashraya. So he says that, so the translation of Sukadeva Goswami said, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are 10 divisions of statements regarding the following: the creation of the universe, this creation, the first creation of the universe is done by the Lord in his super soul expansion, using his external energy. And then creation, sub-creation, he creates the senses and basic 5 gross elements, and then secondary creation is done by Lord Brahma under his direction. That is he creates the 8.4 species of life forms for these living entities depending upon their particular karmic impressions. Previous lives, previous cycle, you know, and then their desires. According to that, tailor-made particular physical body he creates. So there are 10, also he creates 14 planetary systems also. So that's Brahma's creation. It's called Visarga. And then we'll see all these individual subjects that Sukadeva Goswami is explaining in text 57. So here, text 1, 2, 3. Let's go to the next one. The next one, I made a little mistake here. I want to correct that. Next PowerPoint. So there I listed text 4, 5, 6. Verse 4, 5, 6. So 4 is repeated actually. So please correct that. Text 5. Text 5 is the... Yeah. As soon as Bhagavan Prabhu is able to show us. So there's a little lag here. So I made a little mistake there. So text 4 and 5, I repeated 4 here actually. It's exactly the same, right? So text 4 and text 5 is here. The science of God describes the incarnation of the personality of Godhead, different activities together with the activities of his great devotees. So all these verses are describing when he describes these 10 subject matters. Next one, PowerPoint. So I'm just going to go to that, go straight to the explanation of that. Continue. Next one, PowerPoint number 7. Yeah. That is the next, yeah, see that? All the way up to 9. Verses, first 9 verses. So next one, text PowerPoint number 8. So that is chapter text 56. So this is where Srimad Bhagavatam he characterizes this Mahapurana, because it has this 10 subject matter. It describes this 10 subject matters that he just described. So here he quotes these first two verses. First he describes all the 10 subject matters, and then he explains that, you know, how, what is understanding that. Yes, there you see that. 2.10.2, that second verse states that the reason why the scripture describes such topics as creation, maintenance, annihilation, and liberation, and so on, is to help us understand the ultimate topic. So that's what it is. Even the Sukadeva Goswami's objective, his real objective, to use these 9 topics to describe the 10th topic, you know, which is the Supreme Tattva, the Supreme Ashraya. Advaita Jnana, so far we know what are the features that is, it has eternality and is supreme consciousness, and it never undergoes any kind of transformations. Unlike, so they, it is free from cause, effect, and conditionality, as if they are in the material world. As we discussed in the previous week, how Buddhists, they object that, because their viewpoint is always limited to the material world only, because they don't accept the existence of soul, nor do they accept super soul, you know. So everything on a material platform, it has the conditionality, you know, just like milk is the cause of yogurt, right? But when milk is turned into its effect, yogurt, the milk, its own existence is no more there. It's transformed into yogurt. So that conditionality is not there in the supreme consciousness, you know. That is what it is about. So here what Sukadeva Goswami is saying in the second verse, when he's describing the 10 subject matters, what he says that the topics, these 10 topics, beginning with creation, pre and secondary creations, maintenance of the universe, annihilation and liberation, and so on, is to help us to understand the 10th subject matter, and that is the ultimate shelter, the Ashraya Tattva, you know. So that is what the supreme consciousness that I just talked to you about, that is, has eternality, and it has it does not go any kind of transformation. So now we see an additional characteristic, that it is the supreme shelter of entire existence. You know, even we, the living entity, is also under this shelter. That's what it's. So another characteristic that we are learning from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the 10 subject matters. And so here, next part. So how do we understand that it is the ultimate shelter of the entire existence, including we, the living entities? So here, first of all, it is the ultimate source of the entire cosmic creation, you know. Because remember, and we are going to see that the brief synopsis again, because in Srimad Bhagavatam's second canto, it's just a second canto and third canto talks about how cosmic creation came into being, you know. So that we'll see how the super soul, Lord's super soul expansion explains about that, you know. So super soul maintains it, you know. And he is the one, super soul expansion is the one which provides senses and intelligence for the living entities to understand himself, ourselves, and also to understand the supreme self, supreme Tattva also, you know. It gives basic intelligence, you know. Then it also gives the basic instructions for us to really become free from this material existence, you know. First, it gives, by which senses we can perceive our surroundings, all right. And then it gives Vedic instructions. So all these things functions our super soul is providing. So that is why we depend, without super soul, when we take a physical body, when we are born, we don't even know why we came here. We came because we had this unfulfilled material desires from previous lives. But that we have, as soon as we take birth, we forget. So it is super soul that reminds us, this is the reason why you came back, you know. So unless there is no super soul, we won't even know that actually, you know. So he reminds us. So here you see this, how the 9 other topics are utilized for glorification of the 10th topic, the ashray, the Advaita Jnana, or the supreme consciousness without the sin. So here, Jiva Goswami explains, how Sukadeva Goswami does that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, so collectively it shows 2 ways Srimad Bhagavatam glorifies the Supreme Tattva, which is later on. So far in Tathasandarbha, it is mentioned only Bhagavan realization, but then who is Bhagavan? So first of all, the absolute truth is Bhagavan, as we see from the verse on the Advaita Jnana. Brahma eti Paramatma eti Bhagavan eti Shraddha eti. So that is Bhagavan. Who is Bhagavan? Bhagavan is Shri Krishna. That is shown in Krishna Sandarbha. But this elaboration of this thing, it continues in the Bhagavad Sandarbha that will begin in the first week of June. So Srimad Bhagavatam introduces prayers to the Supreme Lord in 2 ways, directly and indirectly. Indirectly means while describing the creation and maintenance of the cosmic manifestation, thereby explains that it is the supreme shelter, the 10th tattva, that is the 10th subject matter, that is the one without which the creation, because there is the underlying source of that, and without that, we cannot even maintain that. So that is when, in the second canto, Brahmaji explains. Remember that, just to remind you, when Narad Muni first taught, Narad Muni is actually the Manas Putra of Brahmaji, you know. And he's also his spiritual master. So Naradji was under the impression, because when he saw Brahmaji created, this 8.4 million species of life forms, as well as he created this 14 planetary system. So he thought my father, Brahma, Lord Brahma, is the supreme being, the supreme creator. But then he also saw the Brahma, he was also meditating. So he asked the question, Brahmaji, who do you mean, if you are the supreme, then I think that you have done such wonderful, magnanimous things, creation of the universe, and so on like that. Who do you meditate on that? Why do you need that? So then Brahmaji explains to him that, my son, that I am not the supreme creator, you know. In fact, I myself has been created, was created by the supreme being. So that's where Brahma Naradmi get to know about that. And then he enlightens Srila Vyasadeva also about that, you know. So all this description, while describing how the creation came into place, the different, entire different, you know, description of the creation, by that describing the creation, there is a glorification of the Supreme Lord, you know. So that's the indirect way. And then direct way also, in the third canto and fourth canto, the dialogue takes place between Maitreya Muni and Viduratma. Thereby also you see, that's the direct glorification of the Supreme Lord. Then of course, Lord Kapil Dev instructing his mother, Mother Devahuti, there also. So there are, Srimad Bhagavatam, just like it's all about questions and answers, it's also all about prayers to the Supreme Lord. Brahmaji glorifies Supreme Lord in Brahmaji's prayers. Then Mata Kunti Mata is praying prayer. Lord Shiva in Shiva Gita is there. And so many different great advanced souls, they glorify the Supreme Lord directly, you know. So that is what you see in Srimad Bhagavatam. So glorification of the Supreme. So the 10th topic, Advaita Jnana, also called Ashraya. Ashraya means the supreme shelter. So remember I told you Advaita Jnana. So Jiva Goswami is describing the different characteristics. What is that supreme consciousness looks like? First, eternality. It is supreme, and it does not undergo any changes. And now that Advaita Jnana is also the supreme shelter, you know, and the fountainhead of everything. Entire existence depends. He is the origin and maintainer of the entire existence. So there are two characteristic everyone has, including the Supreme Being, as well as the Supreme. We have our primary intrinsic characteristic that describes ourselves. That's a permanent feature of that. And then there is an extrinsic characteristic called Tatastha Lakshana. So there is Swarupa Lakshana. That is the primary characteristic of who we are. The Supreme Lord also like that. He has the Swarupa Lakshana, and he also has a Tatastha Lakshana. So Swarupa Lakshana, for us, conscious soul, it's very difficult to see in our conditioned life. We cannot even expect to see that, you know, expect to experience. But we can judge threats with others, just like any other person. If you don't know that person, but from his writings, from his interaction with his other people, that we know about that, we can tell something about looks that person, what kind of nature that person might have that. So here's the same thing, how Lord interacts with his devotees in different incarnations, how, what are his activities, his pastimes, then we can make some idea about that. So first nine cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam talks about all about that, you know, Krishna's different incarnations, his entire nature, what is he, how he intimately deals with his different classes of his devotees. So we learn quite a bit about that. So that is through this Tatastha Lakshana, secondary characteristics or extrinsic characteristic. And then his Swarupa Lakshana is described in the 10th canto, of course. But that's why reason that first we need to know, understand that Krishna is the supreme. Because if we don't study 9th canto, that's why it's never recommended, because many people go straight to the 10th canto without going through the first 9th canto, without understanding that they will have difficulties to grasp, to understand the superhuman activities of Krishna. And they can even misconstrue that. Like Krishna's Rasa Leela with gopis and so on, like that, they will think how, because they will think that because Krishna appears as an ordinary human being there, you know, perhaps with some special qualities, special powers, you know, not other than that. The Krishna himself says, Bhagavad Gita, you know, avajananti mam mudaha manushim tanum ashritam. That when they see in my human form, these mudas, these foolish people, they do not understand my param bhava, and bhuta maheshwaram, I am the supreme of everyone, all living entities. They don't understand that, you know. So that is what exactly what he says. So in order to understand that here is the person who is the supreme person who created this gigantic universe, not one universe, billions and billions of universe, you know. So he cannot be an ordinary person. So and when we have that kind of understanding in our consciousness, then when we go to study 10th canto, then we'll understand that he's dealing with the gopis. All this thing cannot be on a simple material platform, you know. It cannot be meeting between a boy and a girl, you know, like that. So that's why it is said that first we must understand his tatastha lakshana, you know, before we understand swarupa lakshana, you know. So that's the idea. So now he is going to explain further on that next PowerPoint. So PowerPoint number 11, please. So now he is going to explain further. So this is now, yeah, there it is. So in our conditional, so what I just explained to you is right here at PowerPoint. In our conditional state, no experience of God's Swarupa Lakshana, we cannot get that. We cannot grasp that without proper commentary. We may misconstrue, you know. But we can correlate either from aggregate or from the individual viewpoint that we just saw that, from the Jiva Tattva, our own consciousness, we get some, because we are part and parcel of the Supreme. So that 2 weeks lessons that we learned about that actually, you know. So now from the entirety of that, that we see that. So we can then correlate from aggregate or from individuality. Individuality we already saw. So now we are looking at it from the aggregate. So from his creation and maintenance of the so, cantos 1 to 9, that actually describes various potencies of the Supreme Lord. What is capable of that, you know? He is the one who is the very source, everything emanates from him. Krishna says, Aham sarvasya prabhava matva sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samandita. He says, I am the source, everything, source of everything, and from me everything emanates. So those who realize that fact, that truth, they then surrender unto me in devotional service. So first 9 canto talks about his various potencies of Krishna in his different incarnations. So that is description of his tatastha lakshana, you know, these extrinsic characteristics, because it's this external energy and his supersonal expansion that brings about this cosmic manifestation, and by which he maintains them also, maintains that. The only way we can properly comprehend his personal features and pastimes, which are actually narrated in Canto 10, that when we mature enough, devotionally mature enough, then we can truly understand Krishna, you know. So we shouldn't therefore jump directly on the 10th Canto. It's never, it's dangerous. So now, so that is the basic understanding in text 56 about this, you know, Advaita Jnana, that it is the supreme shelter. By the description of these first 9 topics, first 9 subject matters of Srimad Bhagavatam, in order to understand the 10th subject matter. You know. So that is the true purport why Sukadeva Goswami describes these 9 topics. So now he's describing this text 57, what are those 9 topics? So first we must understand that, because through that will lead us to understand the 10th topic, the Supreme Ashrayatva topic. This is the version that is shown, described by Sukadeva Goswami in the 10th chapter of 2nd Canto, his first 10 verses actually. So the material world is the creation of the Lord and reflects his personality. See, that's very interesting. This material world itself reflects his personality, you know. So that is what this Samashti Nirdesha is talking about. So how does Sukadeva Goswami defines these 9 topics? So what happened during the previous cycle that annihilated what happens that time? All the material elements, they become unmanifest now, you know. So all the gross become subtle now. They converted into the basic elements, and they merge into the original dormant or equilibrium state of the material nature, and that's called pradhana. Pradhana is undifferentiated. The 3 modes of material nature are in equilibrium, an unagitated state. That is what that happens when the cosmic manifestation is annihilated, when it's destroyed, when it's dissolved, you know, at that time. And the new cycle then begins. There's a time for the new cycle of creation takes place. At that time, the Lord, now it's a very briefly described area. Detail we see in the second canto, third canto, and so on like that, right? But here, a very brief synopsis is given here, just to make a point here, you know, that it is the entire cosmic manifestation is the underlying feature of the Supreme Tattva, Supreme Shelter, Jesus Advaitana, Supreme Consciousness. So what happens? The next cycle of creation takes place now. At that time, the Lord's expansions, Purusha expansions, Mahavishnu, throws a glance at from distance to the material nature, that is the Pradhana, which is undifferentiated state of material nature, when 3 modes of material nature are under equilibrium. So when he throws a glance, actually the glance is the injection of the living entities. From previous cycle, with all our karmic impressions are stored in a dormant state now, you know. And these living entities now injected back into the new cycle in the material nature, in the womb of material nature, it's called Pradhana. And actually, it is Mahavishnu never in direct contact with it, you know. It's through the agency of Lord Shiva takes place, and the material nature is Durga Devi actually. So that's why in the material world, it's the Durga Devi is the mother of all of us, Amba, you know, and Lord Shiva is our father. But actually, Bija Pradapita, the seed-giving father, is Krishna himself, you know, his expansion, so on like that. So now what happens? When the Pradhana, the dormant material nature, when the living entity is injected in it, with the time potency, so here that's what is explained there. The 3 modes are in balance in the Pradhana state and thus inactive. So for the next cycle of creations, that's called Sarga, Lord through his glance agitates the modes by injecting his living entities into it. So that is the first stage of creation. So this Pradhana now becomes Mahatattva, the cosmic intelligence actually. All the subtle elements now transform into gross elements. This long process is there. And during annihilation, it's exactly reversal takes place, gross to subtle. So let's, in the next part, I've given you a very, very brief synopsis of that, as it is given here. Extremely brief synopsis. No. Next PowerPoint, please. So there's PowerPoint number 12. So that is a schematic way I show you that. So here, that's a synopsis of the cosmic manifestation. The first stage, Sarga, the first subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. A description of the cosmic creation. So Pradhana becomes Mahatattva by injecting, by introducing the living entities from the previous cycle. Here it is. And now, with the time factor, what is the time factor? Very important. Time factor is the super soul. Without super soul, this cosmic manifestation cannot take place at all. Super soul is involved at every step of the way that we learn from Canto 2, Canto 3, and so on like that. With the detailed description is given about the cosmic creation. So the time factor is super soul. Super soul actually enters with the soul, with the individual souls. Super soul always accompanies the individual soul throughout its material existence, one body to another body, and so on like that, in transmigration. So then, next step takes place as the ahankara, the material ego, the bodily conception of life. Ahankara means I, me, mind, things like that. That kind of, so the identification with this body, you know. Now here is very brief given, but that undergoes, this ahankara is expressed in the three modes of material nature. So the mode of passion, it gives the creation. The Lord creates the five subtle elements, the smell, taste, form, tactility, and the sound. And that further keeps on, again, there's very long, many, many steps are there. Here it's just very briefly given. So then five gross elements are created, earth, water, air, ether, fire, like that. And the five knowledge-gathering senses, the cognitive senses, like smell, taste, vision, touch, hearing, and so on like that. So this is the first part of creation, this called Sarga. It is done by the supreme, this supreme consciousness, actually that is super soul, you know, Paramatma, feature of the Supreme Lord. He directly enters there. Next PowerPoint. So now Brahmaji's creation, secondary creation. So he makes use of these basic elements, the 16 tanmatras, you know what's called, and the three modes of material nature, and different combination, permutation combination, then he creates 8.4 billion species of life forms. You know, that's called Visarga, you know, and the 14 planetary systems he creates. You know, and then the third step. Now I'm going to go a little bit faster. So this is just basic steps. Then this maintenance or sustenance of these living beings. And that is also done by the supreme tattva, the supreme shelter, the super soul expansion. Sthiti or sthana. So Lord Vishnu oversees the maintenance of laws and structural design, cores and everything. So that is the, what do you call, three. Remember that I told you the Mahavishnu creates different universes. That each and every universe he enters as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. So Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is the super soul of the universe. And then super soul further expands and enters in each and every living entity's heart. That is the Kshirodakshaya Vishnu and every atom of the universe also. So that Kshirodakshaya Vishnu is the one who maintains that each universe is. He, as a maintainer, he is the predominating deity actually, supersedes over Lord Brahma or even Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is the one through his agency, the dissolution of the universe takes place. But Brahma makes the secondary creation. But all are actually subservient to the Supreme, the Vishnu expansions. And then the Supreme Lord descends in every millennium. So he also appears in every millennium through his different expansions. And thereby actually we learn in the first canto how, in order responding to the six questions of the sages of Naivisharanya, headed by Shaunaka Rishi, Sutta Goswami actually answers that they ask why this Supreme Being enters, what's his function, you know. So basically he comes, descends in the material world and enacts the sweet pastimes. Just hearing that sweet pastimes, you know, the living entity comes in the mode of goodness, and from mode of goodness, then saptam sanjayate jnanam, saptam yat pramadarshanam, then that's how they become enlightened. So that is how he does that. So that's his function when he appears everywhere, and then he also brings his associates to the spiritual world. So they provide the fundamental principles of religious principles, Vedic instructions, and so on like that. And then he nurtures, nourishment he provides also to the jivas. That's called poshana, that's the fourth subject matter. Again, this is a very, very brief description, which details is given in Srimad Bhagavatam. But here, remember, Sukadeva Goswami is giving introduction, but his basic, his emphasis, his goal is to use these nine topics to really describe the tenth one, you know, the supreme shelter tattva. So the first here, now, the fifth one is Uti. There is impetus for the actions. Living entities, they are right from there, they have this impetus to act because of their impressions from karmic impressions from previous lives, and that's how the material desires develop. So we are swimming upstream. Remember, all the time we have this natural instinct to act in response in our attempt to carry out our material desires. And that is impelled by the karmic bondage that we have from previous lives. So they perform various material activities during this period in which the creation is maintained. And in that way, he develops much more additional desires. Okay? So there's no end to it. It continues that. And they are stored in the subconscious mind, actually, that carries from one life to another life. So that is the fifth subject matter. And the sixth one, that is Manvantara. Manvantara means that, that each day of Lord Brahma, there are 14 Manus. And these Manus are the personalities who transmit, who carries different religious principles that he educates to the human society, actually. And his reign, the Manu's reign, is called Manvantara. Right now we are in the seventh Manu, and that is Vaibhasvata Manu. In this day of Lord Brahma. So Manus, along with the deeds of sages and enlightened beings, are godly persons empowered to look over the welfare of all human beings. They provide the basic religious principles, how they ought to act in order to free, because living beings, human beings are suffering because of this impetus for carrying out his material desires in the attempt to satisfy, and it never ends there. It's a vicious cycle. So to help them, this Manus provide that religious principles. And their acts, their activities, how to behave, how to worship, and all these things, it's called Sadharma. Sadharma means it is satsanga, you know. So establishing religious principles in the human society by their own examples, you know. And many kings also comes in that each Manus. And each Manu lasts 71 Chaturi Yuga, which roughly translates, amounts to about 330 million years. And the seventh subject matter is the description of Lord's pastimes with his associates during his descent in material world, called Ishanukatha. So their main purpose is to effect the devotional turning of consciousness. So by his own examples, by his own enactment of sweet pastimes, the living beings are attracted to that, you know. And simply hearing that, their material consciousness is gradually transformed into God consciousness, Krishna consciousness, you know. And that's how there's a hope they become qualified to become free from this vicious cycle of repeated birth, death, and so on like that. So Lord provides all these things. He also provides sadhu sangha. He sends saintly personalities also help them, you know. So vast majority of them, still they don't listen. But those small, small number of population, few fortunate souls, they take up and they become inquisitive, and then they ultimately develop qualification to become free, and they get liberated. And that is given here, you know. So eighth subject matter is now the maintenance cycle is over. Now there is a time to dissolve the cosmic manifestation. So what happens here? So here Lord takes his sight away from this particular. So unless the Lord is constantly looks at us, we cannot survive. As soon as the Lord turns his eyes away from that, that means he closes this called yoga nidra. When he sleeps, all everything must come to end. Everything must be dissolved actually. So at that time, all material elements become unmanifest. In the reverse order, remember, during creation, the subtle elements becomes goes to gross. Now the reversal, gross converts gradually to subtle elements. So in the reverse order, and then this bhagavatam comes as pradhana actually becomes reverse space. So all the three modes of material come under equilibrium and they become inactive. So in the creation, they become flux, agitated. So concurrently, the jivas also give up their gross bodies, but they remain conditioned. Their karmic impression, they remain the karmic impression of that particular lifetime and other lifetime, they remain collectively stored in aggregate form within their subconscious mind, and they are put back in the Mahavishnu's body. But those fortunate souls who became inquisitive by simply hearing the sweet pastimes of the Supreme Lord in their different incarnations, they now become qualified to become free from this vicious cycle. So that is called liberation. That is the ninth subject matter. During the maintenance period, those jivas who were able to transform their material consciousness into God consciousness, specifically Krishna consciousness, on unalloyed devotion to Bhagavan, they become free from both the subtle bodies. So they drop the subtle bodies also and the gross bodies, and then become established in its original nature. While the rest of the people, rest of the population, those who did not become God conscious, they still waste their lifetimes in pursuit of material happiness, then for them, they have to come back again the next cycle. You know? So all the karmic impressions, they are stored in the subtle body. So when the soul goes from one body to another body, the soul also is subtle but sukshma body, manobuddhi ahankara, mind, intelligence, and this false ego, the bodily conception of life goes with it. And we'll learn in a few minutes that even the five senses and the life air, the vital life force also goes along with the soul in the another body. So there is a brief description of the first nine topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now we are going to see the description, Sukadeva Goswami's description of the 10th subject matter. So this first nine topics is to really understand the 10th topic. That's what it's given now. Next part. Ashrayatam. This is very, very important for us to understand now. So the whole reason why Srila Vyasadeva included them was to shed light Bhagavan's energies and activities. That's main idea behind that. So therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam is really about only one topic, and that is this supreme shelter motion to the tattva of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is actually Bhagavan. And that's identified later in the verse, Krishna Sandarbha, identified as Sri Krishna himself. So that is continuing. So what is the basic understanding? And that is given in the seventh text in this first 10 texts of this 10th chapter. So it's next PowerPoint. So you're understanding the inferences in this seventh text. Sudhaya Goswami is explaining now. So here the word cha in Sanskrit is called word. So let's read what the seventh text reads like. Here it is. The Supreme One who is celebrated as the Supreme Being, the Supreme One who is celebrated as the Supreme Being or the Supreme Soul, Paramatma, is the supreme source of the cosmic manifestation as well as the reservoir and winding up. So he is the one who brings about the cosmic manifestation, then maintains maintenance and also dissolution. Thus he is the supreme fountainhead, the absolute truth. So that is seventh. So here in Sanskrit, the word cha, that means and, this was indicates the topic of the Srimad Bhagavatam not explicitly mentioned, such as Poshana. So here it's not that, it's mentioned that. So the word iti indicates Bhagavan, term used by the followers of Bhakti Yuga to designate Ashraya. So when we say Bhakti Yuga, yes, it's really to take shelter the Lord's lotus feet. That's all it's about, you know. Very simple. So this verse reinforces that the famous Tattva Vadanti verse actually, 1-11, Vadanti Tat Tattva Vidas, Tattvam Yat Jnanam Advayam, Brahmeti Paramatma Yati, Bhagavan Yati Shabda Yati. So that famous verse. So that states that the non-dual Supreme Consciousness is called Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. So in this text, in the next text actually, so Jiva Goswami is going to further provide arguments, gives arguments to establish that the Supreme Lord is indeed a Supreme Ashraya Tattva. And how does he do that? And that's also very interesting. That's where he brings God, these three Purushas, you know. And that is the subject matter of this text 59. Text 59. So what did we learn first in text 56 is a basic introduction that it is the Supreme Tattva, the Supreme Consciousness in its supersoul expansion is the underlying feature for the cosmic manifestation. And the supersoul also maintains the living entities and so on like that, you know. It supports the cosmic manifestation. Their super soul and so on like that. And then in text 57, Sudhaya Goswami describes the first 9 topics in order to explain the 10th topic. So that's what we saw, a brief description of this first 9 topics. And so now, beginning with text 58, we are seeing the description of the Ashraya Tattva. So in 59, we just begin how that is what Sudhaya Goswami. So now he is going to explain why he is the supreme shelter. You know, even though the jivas and the senses and the demigods, which are the presiding deities. shelter of each other, but the ultimate shelter of all this is this supreme shelter. That is the main topic. So that's why he brings about these three purushas, you know. And that's what he explains. He begins, he introduces this three purushas about these three entities. You know? So Jiva demonstrated from the remember, we are looking from the description of Samasta Nirdesha, Samasti Nirdesha. That means from the aggregate, we are looking at the Supreme Consciousness. Before we look from the individual consciousness, Jivatmas, now we are looking from the Lord's cosmic manifestation, the aggregates of all the living entities, all the plants and everything, you know. So from that angle, Jiva Goswami is now explaining that. So he is the support of entire existence. So now he further explains that Bhagavan is the support of each individual in their day-to-day. Close the please.
Provided by our external senses, and the demigods take
senses. And the Adhyatmika Purusha, that is the one which provides, which connects with that. So before a living entity, so there's a third Purusha, that is this physical body, Adi Bhautika Purusha. So you ask a question, you know. So this visible physical body, along with the sense objects, that is what Jiva Goswami calls as Adi Bhautika Purusha. Why does he call that? Because this physical body, as we know, it's an inert body. It's not living unless the soul occupies that. So the reason why it is called, because the soul misidentifies with this body. That's why this body is called Adi Bhautika Purusha. You know? So that's the, in a way, that's the physical self, you know, the locus of the senses. That's where the senses, the gross senses, outer senses resides. You know? So here, before physical body comes into play, the soul and the internal senses are there in a dormant state. You know, the devas have not yet taken their positions there. So each of these entities, jivatma, the internal senses, the devas, the demigods, and our body, which provides these outer outlets of the senses, if each of them, they are shelter of each other. So the demigods are shelter of the internal senses, and the physical body provides this outer senses, and the jivas necessary also, that connects with that. So each of them there. So if even one is absent, nothing will work. You know? So let's say if you have a jiva, jivatma, and also we have the internal senses. They are part of this sukshma body or the psychic body, you know. They cannot function, they cannot see. So unless we have a physical body, if there's a flower is there, the jivatma cannot see that flower. Even though they have internal senses, but internal senses cannot, unless there's the outlet of this one. And again, the deva also must come and occupy that place. So without jivatma, there's no life, of course, there's no living body. So you cannot see that. Without the demigods, the internal senses also cannot function. Even though outer senses are there, but the devas do not occupy, it cannot function. The same way, the soul is there, the internal senses are there, devas also there, but if we don't have a physical body, then also it won't function. The physical body also there. And if there's no jivatma, you have body and the internal senses, but then body is dead. So then the living tattvas also must be there. So all three, it looks like that they are the shelter of each other. But the supreme shelter of controlling all three, that is the Atma, this Paramatma. Paramatma is the one which provides the basic directions to jivatma. Jivatma cannot function without Paramatma. In fact, Jivatma is the part and parcel of Paramatma. That's what Jiva Goswami is explaining there. Next one. So this is the basic explanation of these three Purushas. And now it's going to show how the Supreme Tattva, he is the supreme ultimate shelter. That's his point. Index 60 that I just explained to you. Each of them, they are individual shelters of each other, and yet the supreme shelter is Ashraya Tattva. So without that, it won't function. So here it is. Next one. Add Baba cannot distribute the letter to Purim. Because they are merged as if they were the same jiva. And here, Baladeva Vidya Bhushana, he comments that even prior to generation of physical body, the senses and the recipient needs are present within the jiva. They constitute the subtle psychic body before the acceptance of the physical body. Okay? The sukshma deha is there. So at that stage, the cosmic potentials in the sense the demigods, and the empirical self, the jiva, are yet undifferentiated, because no physical actualization of the respective potentials. So we need this physical body. So when the physical body comes into existence, the internal senses take that seats. So the outer senses in the physical body provide the seats to occupy, the internal senses can occupy that seats. And once they occupy the seats, then the demigods come and sit there, you know. And they provide the function of those senses. Next one. Text 16. Final text. The interdependence, so now the interdependence, I already explained that, of these three purushas, they each depend on each other, as I explained you. If one is not there, the other two cannot function. All three must be there. And the super soul is the controller of all three, is the supreme shelter. And his own shelter, and he is his own shelter too. In certain senses, the three purushas may be considered shelters. So here, that's what I just explained. So Jiva Goswami now explains this, the ninth text, ninth verse, the tenth chapter of Ketra 2. We read the ninth verse also here. Here is ninth verse. The all three of the above mentioned stages of different living entities are interdependent. In the absence of one, another one is not understood. But the Supreme Being who sees every one of them, the shelter of the shelter, is independent of all. Therefore, he is the supreme shelter. So that's what is proved here. So Jiva Goswami explains this. Except for the Bhagavan, none can be the independent Ashray Tattva, which is the 10th topic of Srimad Bhagavatam. So on the face value, on the cursory look, Jiva and the preceding deities, or the demigods of the senses, appear to be Ashray. I think there's a typo there. The Jivas, or the empirical self, is the Ashray for the physical body it inhabits. So here, the Jivatma is the shelter of his physical body. That's what he's saying. And the demigods are the shelter of the internal senses. Alright? So for proper perception, all three supports must be present, as I explained to you just now. The empirical self, the Jivatma, the Atmika Purusha, and the physical body, the Adibhautika Purusha, and the presiding deities of the internal senses, Adidaivika Purusha, all must be there, three together, to perceive our surroundings. Next moment. So none of them can be independent Ashraya. Without physical body, conditioned jiva cannot see a flower. Then I just give you one example. You know? And therefore, the distinction between the devas and the jiva, not yet manifest of the body, is manifest. The next one. Let me explain again the last point here. So each of them must be there, you know. And each of them, even though all three are there, the super, without super soul being there, cannot function either. So the one who witnesses all the activities of this three purusha is Paramatma feature, who is his own independent ashraya. The jiva is the intermediary energy, so it's a part and parcel of Paramatma, who is the energetic source. And as such, the jiva remains dependent on him at all times. So Bhagavan is the shelter and source of all well-being of all existence, a position no jiva can claim. So we cannot claim about that. You know. supersoul also controls every one aggregate all together. So Jiva, although one with Bhagavan in some aspects, should not be considered a subject object of worship independent of the Lord, who is the basis of all existence. He is the supreme shelter for himself as well as others. This is Jiva Goswami's explanation of Sukadeva Goswami's statements from Canto 2. So next week, in the last lesson of Tattva Sandarbha, then we will hear about Suta Goswami's statements coming from in the 12th canto. It's very similar but slightly from a different angle. Same conclusions, you know, exactly same conclusion. And he also characterized these different 10 subject matters, although slightly different names given, you know. But otherwise it's very same. So this is where I will stop here and see if there are any questions, comments. Hare Krishna. So what we saw, in short, in the previous section that we discussed last 2 weeks, was compared to Jiva Tattva, the individual senses, and there, from there we extrapolate what the Supreme Consciousness would be there. That's how Jiva Goswami explains. That's called Vaishishta Nirdesha, you know. And then in this section today, from looking at the aggregate, the cosmic manifestation, the maintenance, from that angle, we see the supreme shelf. There is another feature of this non-dual consciousness, supreme consciousness, and we can show that. So Sukadeva Goswami first described the 9 topics. He described 9 topics, but the main function of that, main purpose of that, is to explain the 10th topic, that the supreme shelter. So I'll stop here. See that question here. There's one long question there. Looks like. Jasmine Prabhu. Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Today we learned there are 3 supports who are independent: Jiva, physical body, beside deities. Of this, who is the doer of activities? Well, ultimate doer is, of course, in the Supreme. Remember, there are, in Bhagavad Gita, explain these 3 doers. You know, Jivatma expresses a desire, temporal desire, and Paramatma sitting right there in his heart recognizes this desire, and then he fulfills desires through the agency of the material nature. So there's a triangular communication. It's the subject matter of my book, actually. So ultimate doer, so it looks like the Prakriti is the doer, you know, that famous verse 327 in Bhagavad Gita talks about that, that the living entity in illusion thinks that he is the doer, but he is not the doer. It's carried out by the Prakriti under the supervision of the super soul. So super soul is the ultimate doer, actually, you know, in that sense. Sharad Prabhu. One is a long question. Why the Lord has designed this entity known as Jiva, who is bewildered? Oh, this we discussed in previous 2 sections also, that does the Lord derive pleasure out of it? Cannot be, as he is neutral. His part, that is the soul, is put into miseries. Why cannot the Lord forgive one and all the dark age of Kali and run the creation as he does in Satya Yuga, when miseries are minimum? Number 11 states, I think PowerPoint number 11. First, let me read this question, a long question, and many parts in it. States that the material creation is reflect his personality. Then what about the disturbances, contradictions, miseries in this world in Kali Yuga? It cannot reflect the nature of his personality with these attributes. But again, he is the attributeless. Please enlighten on this issue. Okay, first of all, the last part. As you say, he's attributeless. No, that's not very true. It's the Brahman feature of the absolute truth that is attributeless. undifferentiated. But remember, the full realization of the absolute truth, the full realization of Advaita Jnana, the supreme consciousness, is the Bhagavan feature, and Bhagavan is full of attributes. That's the first number one, you know. And then you are asking a question about, this is a very complex question, but this is a very, very common question people pose, that in a simple terms, let me paraphrase what you are saying, that why are miseries, why are difficulties in this material world? Why are people suffering? In fact, Sanatana Goswami also asked the same question to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, you know. And why, if Lord is so compassionate, as described here, why does he allow injustice? And good people suffer and bad people flourish. That happens. So this is all due to karmic. Lord does not interfere. There's a karmic, as I told you, one of the subject matter was uti, that's the impetus to act. And that is stored in his, the material conceptions stored in his subtle body, sukshma sarira. So that is there. So Lord does not interfere there. Unless you shed all material desires, because we have this material desire to enjoy independent of Krishna, there is the very reason why we are here in this material world. So this is material world is specifically designed for that only, to carry out. So it is our own desire, that Lord does not interfere in that. So that's the reason. So Lord tells us that look, there's a beach coming there, and don't go there. And we still insist upon going there, so we are definitely going to fall in the ditch. So Lord does not stop there. So he allows us to learn from our experience. And that's the reason that two classes before we discussed about that. There are two ways the Lord sort of refines the living beings from his tendency, his rebellious tendency to act and enjoy independently of him. So two ways. First, the negative way. Another is a positive way. Negative way is through his maya potency, his external potency, illusory potency. And that is the one that apparently gives miseries to living entities. Because when he desires to independently enjoy free of Krishna, that is simply not possible. That's not a natural characteristic of the Jivatma. So that is not possible. So that's why the living entity, the Maya, takes his connection away from Krishna. He turns his face away from Krishna, and that's why they are sent back to this material world. To first, he gives full facility to enjoy the material world. Super soul gives all full facility to enjoy. Then his self saturates that, and then he learns the reality that the true happiness is never here in this material world. Material world is designed to give difficulties, to understand that this is not our world. It's like fish out of water, actually. You know, we must go back to where we came back, you know, came from where we came from. And the only way we can go back is to purge those material desires. And so that is the negative way of controlling, refining these living entities. So through sufferings, that's the way. It's like discipline. We as parents sometimes discipline their children. Their children, like a nice, very example Prabhupada gave actually. Prabhupada had a little son actually. And son insisted, the fan was running actually at that time, for the summer season. And this little child insisted upon to poke his finger into the fan that is moving, alright? Of course, father told him that, Peter, don't do that, you'll get hurt. But he kept insisting that, and he was crying. So, what did Prabhupada did that? What he said, okay, so he slowed down the fan, lowest setting, and said, now you try. As soon as the son put the finger in it, and of course, he recoiled back because of the natural instinct. And so, with little hurt, learned the lesson that this is not the thing that he should do that, you know. So Prabhupada did best example the way our thing, that we insist upon. So there is a Vedic instructions are there provided and tells you that, plus super soul within our heart tells you that, the beta, don't do that, you'll get hurt, you'll fall back, fall into that ditch. But we keep insisting upon that, and Lord has given the freedom of our expression, you know. He does not interfere with our free will. So in a negative way, he allows us to do that. So that's what your answer to your second question. Then why does he allow that suffering? Because we insist upon that, you know, and we have this free will. The Lord doesn't interfere. So by experience, so the Maya's job is to negatively control and teach the living entities. This is not your world, actually. So he learns by experience, by suffering. Lord doesn't intend, Lord doesn't like him to suffer, right? But just like a parent, you know, affectionate parents, he does not want his child to suffer, still in order to learn, right? And sometimes teacher has to discipline, and parents cannot interfere there with disciplining that kid, you know, because that is meant for, good for the child actually, to learn. So this Mayadi performs that kind of function in his material world. So there's a negative way. In a positive way, Lord himself descends in his past tense. So those fortunate souls who develop desire become inquisitive to hear that. And he sends his devotees also, by associating with his devotees, you get an inspiration to come towards Krishna and hear that. And you learn that, you know. So you develop the desire to hear about Krishna, and that has a potency to purify your selfish material desires. And you want to work for Krishna. So the same activities are there, that you do it as other people do that. Instead of self, same. You work, you do the job, everything like that, but you do the portion of it and offer to the Lord. You know, same activities, everything's there. He also marries, he also has children and everything, all these things there. But he trains his children to become Krishna conscious, as he himself is Krishna conscious. And that way he teaches them, you know, to his own children also, you know. So there is a positive way of giving instruction to such souls who are pre-tiered. So devas are all pre-tiered, you know. Demons are not that obedient, you know. They learn by experience, you know, like that. So this is the way this material world is like training wheels. It's a training school that we are being sent here, and we learn. So sometimes we don't learn in one lifetime. Several millions and millions of lifetime keeps on going, and depending upon the different kinds of desire we develop, a specific kind of body the Brahmaji provides. There's one of the 8.4 million life species. And a particular branded system is sends us to become facilitate carrying out that particular desire. But ultimately it doesn't happen that way, because it's designed like that, you know, to learn from that. Then we finally get the human form of life. Only human form of life, we have this higher intelligence. And we become attracted to Krishna consciousness. And then we become qualified to go back to spiritual. So because of the lower modes, that is the problem. Kama krodha lobha mada moha matsara. It's the lower modes that forces us to act that way, you know, to this hankering, material hankering is there. When we come to the mode of goodness through simply hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, in association with other devotees, then we come to the mode of goodness. Then we become more inspired to hear more and more, attend this kind of classes actually. So I'm, because you have long questions, so I have to give it a little long to also. So I hope you understand that, you know. So it is material world is a reflection of his personality in that sense. Watch out. So just Prabhu, another second. So if Paramatma is the doer, why does Jivatma get affected by laws of karma? Now Paramatma is the doer, but remember he is the doer. The whole thing, I told you that there are three doers. The whole thing is set up, the most three cascade of reaction is set up by the jivatma. He expresses desire, depending upon his qualification, through the material, this physical body, the Prakruti. But it is the Jivatma himself sets everything in the cascade of this in motion, actually. So that is why the, when Jivatma explains, he, the living entity, explains that particular desire that I want to enjoy independent of Krishna, then this thing happens. So in that way, even the Lord is the supreme poor, but he Jivatma, because of his desires, everything matters in that desire. Many times I say in my classes that Lord is looking for a genuine desire. If we have a desire to enjoy, he provides facility for that also. If he wants to forget him, then Lord also helps him to forget him. But when we develop desire to work towards Krishna or to associate with his devotees, then Lord also facilitates that. So we, through our free will, through our expression of desire, that sets in motion actually. So in that sense we are the doer actually. But independently we cannot carry out our desire. Jivatma enters and thereby agitation in otherwise balanced Mahat-tattva. The three gunas are balanced in the absence of Jivatma. Yes, that's true. Here is the answer. Bhakaran Prabhu is providing the answer to his Srimad Bhagavatam readings. Do the wish Paramatma allows it to view that? That's exactly what I'm just explaining, that three kinds of view. It's the Jivatma's expression of his desire that sets in motion. Jivatma's eternal, sanatan, bewildered state is the reason of descending in material world. Exactly. Naveen Prabhu. Does the Jiva have the same subtle body across different cycles of annihilation and creation? The sukshma body is mano, buddhi, ahankar. The mind, intelligence, and this false ego. So mind stores the impressions of this life and millions of other lifetimes, Everything is stored there. And as long as we have these material desires there, it carries from one life to another life. But every lifetime, goes through that different experiences. And some fortunate souls develop that this is not right. And there's the beginning of that, So once we surrender unto the Krishna, then automatically he purifies our heart of this what we call anarthas. So that's why the Srimad Bhagavatam Purana Anartha Upasmam Sakshat Bhakti Yogam Adokshaye Lokasya Janata Vidvan Chakra Sattvata Samhita. That's why this simply surrendering to Krishna in Bhakti Yoga, Anartha Upasmam, all the anarthas, unwanted desires, undesirable things that impurities in my heart is taken away by the Lord, actually, and so simply hearing that Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a reason this Vidwan, this learned personality, has compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, what he himself saw in his this samadhi, it was shown all these things. So he has the subtle body always going through different lifetimes, millions of times, and it's constantly changing in the sense the impressions in the subtle body is changes. So when all the material desires are purged and converted into spiritual desires, then he doesn't have that subtle, he drops, he shakes off the subtle body. When the no more subtle body is there, and the super soul also goes up, because super soul existence is only during his material existence. When that is over, then he's become qualified to go back to spiritual world. So that's how we shed off our subtle body. Through various cycles of creation, annihilation, and so on like that. So during annihilation, does the Jiva's body, subtle body covering exist even when he's situated within the body of a Mahavishnu? Yes. If a particular cycle, this cosmic cycle, if that Jiva has not become Krishna conscious and he still has this material desire stored in his subtle body, so that is stored in a dormant stage and we go into the body of Mahavishnu. So then Mahavishnu, because that Jiva is not qualified to go back to spiritual spiritual world, then is injected back into the next cycle of creation. And we continue all the way. So sometimes multiple cycles of creation that we go on, that millions and millions of lifetime we spend that. You know? Bhavana Mataji. Jivatma is soul, subtle body, correct? Now, Jivatma has nothing to do with this body. Body, physical body is given because he has this material desire that he can carry out. Jivatma himself cannot carry out without physical body, as we saw that. Adi Bhautika Purusha must be there. So, he, in order to carry out his desires, he has to have this material body because he has material desires. When he has purged all material desires, then he gets a spiritual body and goes back to spiritual world. You know? So his subtle body he accepts, is a part of material body, he accepts because of his desires. And in order to fulfill that desire, he has to have that physical body, gross body and subtle body both. So soul is in a pure state initially to show when it does start desiring to get the coverings and thus get embodied. From where the cycle starts? Yes. The cycle starts where he develops this kind of desires. So, right there, in fact, the second canto, Brahmaji says that that the five kinds of outer layers that he created because of that. So, we swim upstream all the time actually because of these desires. But this is not an impossible task. This Krishna himself comes every millennium and he also comes in all the time in his different incarnations. He also sends his personal associates in this material world to give us the opportunities to become free from this vicious cycle. All the time he gives that, you know. So it's up to us. He extends his arm. We have to hold his extended arm, you know. Then we are saved. He Bhagavad Gita says that. Krishna says, I am ready to pick you up from this material existence. But you have to hold my arm. Holding by his arm means whatever the rules and regulations is led by you, you follow that, you know. Sanjeev Prabhu, Hare Krishna Prabhu, the demigods controlling subtle senses are the ones created during first phase of Visarga, correct? Actually, this is the point it raised across my mind also. Remember, demigods are also actually living entities. Who is controlling their senses? Sometimes I wonder that. A very interesting question that occurred to me that these demigods themselves are living entities. And they too have material desires. But they are the servants of the Supreme Lord. They are the obedient servants of the Supreme Lord. Just like you have a president, his secretaries, and his staff, and they are his policemen and so like that. They are supposed to control all the living the subjects, right? But they too also have to follow those rules and regulations. If you break their own rules of that king or president, then of course they also suffer. So demigods they're following Lord's desires, but they get pulse because of this in the heavenly planets. But they follow all the rules and regulations of the Supreme Lord. And then it says that verse, that if you have material desires, but if you surrender yourself to the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna, then he allows to satisfy that desire. But while he allows to satisfy those desires, at the same time he purifies your heart also. So the very root cause of your material desires, he removes that. So initially he will allow you, just like a little child. He wants to play like a little child, baby girl, wants to play, and she watches her sister, her mother cooking on the stove. And I want to handle that stove. I want to cook myself. So mother recognizes that. So what does mother do then? Mother goes and buys a toy stove and everything, you know. So the child, the baby girl, plays with the toy, and then she learns all these things, you know. So that is how it is. So Sanjeev Prabhu's question here, the demigods controlling subtle senses are the ones created during first phase of Visarga. Yes, that's true. The is created, demigods are created, all this in a detailed way it's explained in the second canto. Alright, okay, we already gone over time, so I think we should stop here. And I'm sure Nishana is ready to conclude the class with the Shiva prayer.